Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Brewers Outlet gift cards make a great gift. Shows how much you care. But remember, keep that in mind. That's an easy one to cross off the list. Specials between now and Tuesday. Yuengling Golden Pilsner 12-pack cans and bottles, $9.77. Beers of Mexico 12-pack bottles, just $7.95. And Coors Light 24-pack 16-ounce cans, just $16.88. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Make it a 2019 to remember by getting a car now. Meanwhile, and but you'll be dealing with the best, by the way, best service. They take really good care of you all the way through the process. I mean, there's nobody better than Sunbury Motors. Nobody. All right, let's set things up for you. Our thanks to Emily Kaplan, ESPN.com, opening half hour, we talked NHL expansion to Seattle. That's officially done. $650 million to get in. They're renovating Key Arena. And Seattle will be the 32nd franchise in the NHL in 21-22. Closer than you realize, probably. Sounds distant, but it's not. But our thanks to Emily Kaplan who joined us in the opening half hour. Jerry Dulac, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, previous half hour. Steelers' perspective on the matchup with the Patriots on Sunday. We'll get Andrew Callahan, MassLive.com, in just a few moments to discuss the Patriots part of it. Final half hour, Joe Giulia joining us from the Raleigh News and Observer, Penn State, NC State basketball coming up tomorrow. But first, our play-by-play calls of the day. The Chargers, at one point down 28-14 with about four and a half minutes to go in the fourth quarter, come back and win. And in the waning seconds, Mike Williams and Phillip Rivers hook up not once, but twice.
Rivers in the shotgun. Looks to the right for Mike Williams. Throws to Mike Williams. Caught! Touchdown! Touchdown, Chargers! Mike Williams with his third of the day. This is the game. Shotgun snap. Rivers rolls to the right, throws to the end zone. Caught! It's good! It's good! Mike Williams with the grab! Chargers lead 29-28. Still 4 seconds left in this game. There was no one. The closest Chief was in Kansas City, Kansas.
Mike Williams won one-on-one for the touchdown, and he won one-on-none for the two-point conversion.
What a call, and what a game for Mike Williams. No one went with him.
He was naked.
Completely wide open.
Josh Lewin, Jim Lazlevic with the call on the Chargers Radio Network. Wow. The Chargers went for two with 4 seconds to go. They played to win, and they won. That is our play-by-play call of the day. And that one was with an exclamation point. All right, Steelers, coming up on Sunday, we'll take on the New England Patriots. He did great work in Lebanon covering Penn State football. He did great work at 24/7. Covering Penn State football. Now he's doing great work with MassLive.com covering the Patriots, and that is Andrew Callahan. Andrew, it is really great to hear you on the other end of the line again.
Good to speak with you, Steve. How are we?
Doing very well, and we hope that the new job has met expectations for you.
Oh, it's exceeded expectations. I really had the best summer of my life and really the luckiest in terms of everything how fell into line, but it doesn't mean I don't miss the folks back in State College and regular contact with those B people and Hope to make a visit actually sometime soon.
Look forward to it. Let's get to the Patriots. Right now they're a team that is, what, 9-3 on the year?
9-4.
Or 9-4 on the year after the loss to Miami. In talking with other people, because obviously you couldn't cover what they did last year, what are some of the differences between this Patriots team this year and the one that lost in the Super Bowl last year?
Well, I think you start with the positive, and the defense is certainly more fortified with certain guys that have really just elevated their game from a year ago. You look at Stephon Gilmore, who's in line to make an all-pro team and certainly a Pro Bowl at the very worst. You've got guys, you know, stepping up on the edge. Trey Flowers providing more pass rush. They've done a better job scheming that pass rush, which was, of course, absent in the Super Bowl. And then on the negative side, you know, they've had the personnel offensively that's really been a rotating cast of characters, which to me has led to the lack of an identity. Josh Gordon obviously had in September. Gronk has been in and out of the lineup. Sony Michel, the running back out of Georgia, same deal. So they've not had the continuity, and I think you've seen that suffer as the season has gone on, which has been atypical for them when they usually hit their stride in late November, early December.
How well has Brady thrown the deep ball?
You know, it's funny because we just talked about that rotating cast of characters. Earlier this season, he was throwing that to Chris Hogan and Philip Dorsett. Now, of course, when he's got Josh Gordon, it looks much better. In my opinion, Brady is still about 90 to 95% of the MVP he was a year ago. The deep ball has not been what it was, but, you know, it's still been better in past years when people might have speculated, hey, this is the decline of Tom Brady. The deep ball isn't so good. And then last year, he's the best in the league at it. So it's somewhere in between.
When Gronk's not in there, how much does the Patriots' offense change?
You know, I wouldn't say it's as significant as past years because at this point, with how often he's been injured, they've just become accustomed to it. The problem is when he's out, as you saw, not in this last loss against Miami, but when they were at Tennessee, had their doors blown off, Gronk missed that game. It was the last game he's missed, and it's because it affects the way the Patriots can attack the middle of the field, whether that's play action and he sneaks behind the linebackers at the second level or just wins his one-on-one matchup with a safety. So Tennessee flooded the middle of the field. They were playing man coverage, put small zones in the front, forced Brady to throw to the outside, and it didn't work. So teams have been doing that for years, but, you know, for the Patriots, they miss him there, and when they don't have the running game going and Gronk's out, it's a fatal combination.
When they've had Sony Michel, though, how well has he played and how well have the Patriots played with him?
You know, he's been fine. You know, it's honestly difficult to pinpoint, you know, a trait of Michel's where you go, wow, he's spectacular at this, or he does really well in that area. You know, he's an all-around back, but, you know, doesn't really wow you. So their offensive line has been good, better in pass protection than it has been run blocking. You know, his availabilities have been a little bit better where he had a knee issue coming into camp, suffered more trouble there and then bounced back. So he's been okay, but he's not a game-breaking back like the old guy that we now see in New York. He used to be running in that jersey 26 for Penn State.
Julian Edelman finally got back into the lineup. Did anything change for the Patriots, or did it change for Brady when Edelman got back?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he caught a pass on his first offensive snap back from the four-game suspension he served, and they go on and run up 38 points in the Colts and then, you know, drop 43 on the Chiefs right after that. So they got rolling, and, you know, he's really been steady. I think it took a couple of games for him to find his old form, and certainly in training camp you could tell coming off that ACL. I mean, he's 32 years old. He wasn't the same player, but he certainly has been the last month, and that's helped them, you know, come along a little bit more, even if they just had that dud in Miami on Sunday.
All right, the Miami thing. I know Belichick took some responsibility for what happened there. It's not unusual to have a tall offensive player with the idea they're going to throw a Hail Mary. They didn't throw a Hail Mary. They ran a hook and ladder. Was that the thinking that, hey, look, they're going to throw one down there. I want to have a guy that's 6'6", 6'7", down there with long arms, and they didn't run the play that they expected?
Yeah, that's basically it. Weird thing about that, though, is when we go into the locker room postgame, and obviously you just have this shocked group of players, almost to a man, the head said, listen, we're expecting the hook and ladder. So for the coaches, they felt they were kind of in a gray area where they could still throw it deep. Obviously, that ball from where Ryan Tannehill threw it, you know, his front foot was on the 22-yard line in Miami. That's not going 78 yards
exactly.
In the end zone.
That's
he had a bump shoulder coming in. He hurt his ankle during the game. So the players all seemed to expect that. It didn't work out. In my opinion, it was the first thing I wrote post-game. Belichick made a big mistake because even if that ball is a Hail Mary, let's say, they have a much better player on the bench available to them. Obi Melifonwu is a safety they signed midseason. That guy's 6'4", and he leapt 42 inches at the combine 2 years ago. He might be the best athlete on the team, and that's a guy who plays defense full-time. They should have put him in, or at least Devin McCourty instead of Gronk.
Right, and that's exactly right. And you're right, Tannehill can't even remotely get the ball that far. That's why you probably expected, just based on, you know, this is not a case. If it's Patrick Mahomes, I think you might think differently.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
When you saw Mahomes in person, what stuck out to you about him even in defeat?
You know, it's funny because I've only been on the beat for this year, but obviously I've been watching football almost my entire life. It's just the sense you get when you see something for the first time and you're not expecting it. And that's what Mahomes is doing. I mean, I don't have to tell anyone this because we saw it last weekend against the Ravens when he's making a no-look pass over the middle. It's not a case of looking off the safety. He's literally throwing a direction in which he's not staring. So it's just a matter of the scheme around him is very good. He's got the complement of weapons. But even accounting for those assets that he's able to rely on, he's just got these physical tools that are just so rare. I mean, you could compare his arm to Elway's. You could compare his arm to any quarterback, I think, in NFL history, and it stacks up right there with it. So just when all that comes together, what does it look like? It looks like something we haven't seen before, and this is this guy's second year in the league and first as a starter. It's
obviously
unbelievable.
Yeah, obviously he's his own guy, Andrew, but boy, you watch that. Just the quickness of the release. It's very Marino-like, Elway-like, Joe Namath-like. Namath had an awesome release.
Yeah, and it's, you know, something that is supposed to be a generational thing, whether in terms of it's just the arm or the mobility or the release or his understanding of the offense. But he's up there making calls, and the only way the Patriots were able to slow them was they started, you know, basically hit quicksand when they got into the red zone in the first half. In the second half, when they played back in week six, you know, the Chiefs are going up and down the field, but the couple third downs that they made, they were able to confuse him. So he's got everything that you would want from a quarterback, but when they're able to throw some different pressures at him, he had an incomplete deep ball on third down. They get off the field. The Patriots score just 3 more points than they do. That was the only thing that really stopped them once he stopped getting in his own way.
All right. They lost to Tennessee. They just lost to Miami. Well, were there any common threads as to why they lost each game? Obviously, one was last second. The other one was actual domination.
Yeah, you know, I wrote about this actually on Monday because in my mind, you know, the Steelers game this Sunday is the Patriots' last chance to prove who they are because there are some common threads. And you could even take this back to when they lost to Detroit and Jacksonville. And, you know, September football is very different, as we know, from December. However, the run defense in each loss has been an issue. Now, they had Danny Shelton, who's basically their de facto nose tackle, inactive for the second straight week. Shelton has underwhelmed. He's not a game breaker. But basically, you have the same two defensive tackles playing the entire game down in Miami in mid-80s heat. That, I think, was a problem. But the Dolphins scheme very well. You go back to Tennessee, they're churning out regular yardage and putting the hammer down. So the Patriots have struggled when offenses remain balanced. I think they're best when they're able to deploy, you know, 6, sometimes 7 defensive backs and then mix, you know, all these different schemes because players have told us this year, listen, we're doing more from an X and O standpoint than we ever have, which is a big asset when your head coach is Bill Belichick and you're able to put his brain essentially on the field. So when you've got teams that are willing to stay more 50-50 with the run and pass, which in my mind is not always necessary, but against the Patriots, it seems to get the job done. And we saw that against the Titans and most recently against the Dolphins.
Obviously, the Steelers right now don't have the ability to run the ball. I don't care. That's what I always love about Steeler fans. The third string running back. We love him, really. It's the reason he's third string, man. Fitz Toussaint. The reason he's third string. The guy that started against the Ravens in the playoffs. The reason he's a backup, okay? Those guys are not great NFL players. So they don't have that right now. So when you look at the Steelers, what are you seeing without a quality running back?
Well, you know, I think they're still relying on it because of what it affords them in their play action game. And I think they do a good job from, you know, marrying those same schemes where it's not just, hey, we're going to fake this handoff, but the blocking looks similar, which is a smart way to go about it. You know, for them, it's unusual to see. I think they're just faltering in the worst moment. That starts with Ben. You know, we've seen him in the red zone now almost 3 straight weeks with a turnover, a poor play. You know, it's one thing to have your kicker slip and miss a field goal at the end, but you know what? They were in that situation for a reason. So I think they're still sorting themselves out. Obviously, Connor's loss has been a big one. You can talk about Le'Veon Bell, but I feel like people have beat that storyline to death. So, you know, they're more talented than they've shown. But when you've got a defense that, you know, has really been below average to average, I don't know, the last decade or so, and then your offense takes a step back, yeah, you're going to have some of the losses that they've had. And if they can't run the ball against the Patriots, it's going to be really tough.
You know, I look at a lot of times when I'm looking at games, I'll say, okay, who's got the best unit on the field? Who's second? Who's third? Who's fourth? The Steeler defense would probably be the fourth best unit on the field, in my opinion. I don't know if you concur with that or not. But if you do concur with that, what makes them the fourth best unit on the field Sunday?
You know, it's tough because I've only gotten back to see the last few games, but I think it's just a matter of, you know, when you look at, again, in key spots, the certain things that they're calling or the personnel they have in the field. You know, you go back to Ryan Shazier goes down as a linebacker. They don't really have an impact player, you know, at that second level. They haven't had great corners for years. So it's partly a matter of personnel, but also you're matching up against the Chargers who make this humongous comeback on your own turf, basically just throwing to Keenan Allen out of the slot because you continue to match him with linebackers in zone coverage. So Brady has sliced and diced the Steelers for years because they've relied on, you know, basically the same old formula with just this soft zone, and they'll mix in some different zone blitzes as you always have to do to try to confuse Brady. But, you know, at this point, I just think they've not been willing to adapt enough to what they've seen. And again, when either the schemes don't work out or the personnel just kind of is what it is, they need Big Ben and Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster to rise up. And when obviously they haven't been able to do so, they've lost some games.
Who's the best player you've seen so far in person? Who is the best team you've seen so far in person?
Oh, that's a tough one. You know, I think I would go back to the Chiefs. You know, I don't think there are any other teams in the league that could do what they did in terms of mounting that comeback in the second half and just having, you know, the split second, you know, scores. And it's tough to say with the player, but I think in terms of a game-breaking impact, Tyreek Hill is number one with a bullet because, again, it's not only just the long speed, which we all heard about when he came out of college, it's matching that with the quickness. And as, you know, Patriot corners put to us, you know, before that game that week, it was like, listen, if you don't get a good jam on him or you miss, it's good night. Like, just forget about it. So that's a guy no one else in the league has. He doesn't compare to anyone else. He's one of the quickest, obviously the fastest. And he can do it in multiple phases, which is really important for a team like that. The Chiefs, for all we hear about their offense, you know, they've got the number one special teams in the league, and he's a big reason why.
The Red Sox won the World Series back in October. So obviously there's a fan base that's excited and thrilled about what they have. How are the Patriots fans in this particular fall? What are you reading from them?
You know, they're angsty, and I think that's what happens when they have four losses, you know, is renting, you know, week 15 here because it's just abnormal for them. But, you know, I think at the same point, there's the confidence that they feel they've earned after so many winning seasons where even no matter what happens, you know, they feel like they'll be in contention at the end. And right now, when you look at the AFC, I think there are too many teams perhaps besides the Chiefs that they would be afraid of. So I think they're about where they are. They understand it's a different type of year, and they're just, you know, kind of waiting for this next game to really determine, hey, okay, if the Patriots win and win handily in Pittsburgh, they're absolutely okay. Or if they lose, this is a Patriots team that's really been in trouble. Because they don't lose not only just four games, but the way they have, by double digits as they did against Tennessee and then Detroit and Jacksonville early in the year, that just doesn't happen. It has so far. There are perhaps reasons why. But if it happens again, that pretty much is the team is what it is at this point.
Andrew, a complete pleasure. Thanks so much. It was great connecting with you again.
Absolutely, Steve. Hope we get to chat sometime down the road.
Andrew Callahan, MassLive.com, covering the Patriots, now as a beat writer for the New England Patriots, and doing great work there, just like he did here at Penn State. That game coming up on Sunday between the Steelers and the Patriots, you'll hear it on 100.9 The Valley with Bill Hillgrove, Tune Chilkin, and Craig Woofley. Of course, the Eagles will be on Eagle 107. Bucknell basketball, of course, coming up on Eagle 107 as well. Santa Claus tonight, by the way. Santa will be on from 6 to 7, Magic Radio this evening, as we count down to Christmas. Somebody asked me about that. Have you even started yet? I said, no, I'm done. I said, really? I said, look, in what I do, if I don't stay ahead, I will fall so far behind. I'll fall so far behind if I don't stay ahead. So I try to discipline myself as much as possible to stay ahead because I've got, obviously, a game in Atlantic City tomorrow. And we'll be talking with Joe Giulio coming up here in the next half hour from the Raleigh News and Observer about the NC State team. I've got a game in Atlantic City tomorrow. Tuesday night, I've got to go to Pittsburgh because I've got a game Wednesday night in Pittsburgh. And then from Pittsburgh, we directly fly to Alabama, and I'm in Tuscaloosa Thursday and Friday. So we'll be doing the show in Pittsburgh on Wednesday, the show in Tuscaloosa on Thursday and Friday. exactly when am I, you know, and we're getting back at what, 2, 3 in the morning on the 22nd? I mean, so if I don't stay ahead, I fall behind. So that's why I've got to take care of it when I do. Hey, by the way, we have a great segment coming up on Monday's show. Nicole Auerbach from The Athletic, she wrote the article with all the interviews in it about expanding the college football playoff to 8. Nicole's going to join us on the show Monday. That's going to be terrific. Today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Coming up, we'll preview Penn State NC State basketball here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection, imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed all together now, is second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And what about those Brewers Outlet specials? Beers of the week through Tuesday. Yingling Golden Pilsner, 12-pack cans and bottles, only $9.77. Beers of Mexico, 12-pack bottles, $7.95. Coors Light, 24-pack, 16-ounce cans, $16.88, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, one other note on Brewers Outlet. Don't forget about Brewers Outlet gift cards. Make a great gift. Easy. You go in, you have it taken care of, and you're giving a great gift. All right, tomorrow is the start of the bowl season. Yes, the Celebration Bowl is Alcorn State against North Carolina A&T. We threw that in there for the suit. It's not here on my list, but we know it's being played in Atlanta. And, of course, we made our bowl picks yesterday. I think I'm going to go maybe 10 and 29 on mine, but we'll see. The first bowl is going to be the Cure Bowl in Orlando. It'll be in Camping World Stadium, right where Penn State's going to be playing the Citrus Bowl. Tulane in Louisiana tomorrow, 1:30. That's on CBS Sports Net. Utah State and North Texas play in the New Mexico Bowl at 2 o'clock on ESPN tomorrow. Then it's going to be Arizona State and Fresno State in the Las Vegas Bowl. That'll be on ABC coming up tomorrow. And then tomorrow night is the New Orleans Bowl, taking place at the Superdome. That's also on ESPN. But the Las Vegas Bowl is on ABC, by the way, and that's the 3:30 game tomorrow. Big weekend, Penn State wrestling, Arizona State. This should be a great test for Penn State. They haven't been tested at all so far. I mean, they've been tested, but they've been so good, they've run through everybody. So they've got Arizona State. Then tomorrow, Penn State basketball with the Nittany Lions. Tomorrow, taking on NC State in Atlantic City. We'll talk to Joe Giulia in just a few minutes. From the Raleigh News and Observer. It's a big game for Penn State. Here's the reason why. They already have the one win over Virginia Tech. If they were to get a win over NC State, which right now in the net rankings and the KenPom rankings, they're a top 15 team right now. They're 8-1. If they were to get a win over NC State, there would be a lot of domino that would go with that. And that's one of those wins that would carry over with influence into March. That's why tomorrow is important. And then they get Duquesne, and then they get Alabama. So they got three games in a row here, two of the three in particular, at Alabama, and then neutral floor with NC State could really help them. The Duquesne game would help them because it would give them a road win. All right, so, I mean, that's how you have to look at it. That's tomorrow at 2 o'clock in Atlantic City. So that's what we have going on for you with basketball. And then don't forget hockey tomorrow night. Penn State is in Wells Fargo in Philadelphia to take on Princeton. So if you want to go to basketball in Atlantic City, you can swing by Philadelphia and catch the Nittany Lion ice hockey team against Princeton tomorrow evening. So there's plenty going on. Steelers coming up on Sunday against the Patriots, 100.9 The Valley. The Eagles are on Eagle 107. Bucknell basketball at Ohio State. Take on Chris Holtman's team. They're at Ohio State. That'll be on Eagle 107 with Doug Birdsong, who always does an awesome job. All right. And, of course, we have Shikellamy basketball for you as well with Kevin Hurt and the Chief Dave Ritchie. All right. So that's the lineup for the weekend, and that includes Penn State basketball. I mentioned the significance earlier about the game. Here's another Power 5 team that you're playing. You're playing them on a neutral floor. They played NC State last year, got off to a great start. Penn State led that game 11-0 last year. And then they couldn't score after that, you know, relatively speaking. And NC State came back at home and won the game. And I want to say it was like 85-78 or something like that, 85-77. NC State won. The thing is, this is a completely different NC State team. I mean, yeah, Torn Dorn's there. Markell Johnson, who led the ACC in assists, he's there. But they have seven transfers on this team. With that, we bring in Joe Giulia, joining us from the Raleigh News and Observer. Joe, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with this version of NC State. They've changed over the team. There are a lot of transfers there. Thus, Kevin Keats has had to go out and has had to mold them into a team. What kind of job has he done so far?
So far, so good. Maybe even a little bit on the surprising side with how well they've kind of come together, given the number of new parts that they've had, particularly the game at Wisconsin, which obviously they lost. But, you know, as you guys know, in the Big Ten, that's one of the more difficult places to play. And officiating wise, it was not a you're not going to get many calls there. So,
no.
You know, they were pretty happy with how they played there, and then they beat Vanderbilt. And obviously, now this is the next test for them. And I mean, Penn State team, obviously, you guys know more about than I do, but that beat a Virginia Tech team that's expected to be, you know, one of the five or six best teams in the ACC this year.
Let's get to the known entities. NC State known entities. Torn Dorn would be obviously one of them. Where is he a better player now than the one I saw last year down in Raleigh?
I think he's more into his own role and he knows what he's supposed to do. You know, last year they had some bigs. They had Omiri at seven. They had Malik Abu. They had Leonard Freeman, who played a lot in that early game. This year, it's really TD at the four. And he's really their primary rebounder this year as well. They don't have your seven. He transferred to Georgetown.
Right.
So it's, you know, I think he has a better idea of what he's supposed to do. And I think they have a better idea in general of the style of play that Kevin Keats wants to employ. And I don't think we can call it small ball anymore because nobody really has size anymore. You know, it's usually just one big and a bunch of guards. And, you know, TD is really a guard, but he's really the best rebounder on the team too. So he understands that part of his role.
Your 7 in particular really hurt Penn State last year, and then he ends up, as you mentioned, transferring to Georgetown. How concerned are they about a matchup inside against a guy, for example, like Mike Watkins?
I think any team with size is going to bother NC State. You know, they did a good job rebounding at Wisconsin. Ethan Happ is not necessarily a traditional post player, but they did a pretty good job against him. But yeah, I think any size is going to bother NC State. They have Derek Funderburk, who's a transfer from Ohio State. He's a skinny kid, good athlete, but he is going to have some issues with foul problems in ACC play, and I would assume against another Power 5 opponent like Penn State. Not, you know, he tries to block too many shots. He's not very strong, so he can get kind of caught out of position, and that's going to be a challenge for them pretty much all season. Trying to get the best out of him. And then they have Wyatt Walker, who's a grad transfer from Samford. Led the Southern Conference in rebounding 2 years ago. Who, you know, he's not a great athlete. He was Grayson Allen's high school teammate down in Florida. He's going to be the primary defender in the post for them.
And Daniels is coming off a good game, and he's a transfer out of Utah. Got another transfer they have out of Wilmington. Of the transfers, who really has been the best, most consistent guy that really right away stepped in and you said to yourself, all right, that was a great pickup?
I think C.J. Bryce,
yeah,
who you mentioned as the Wilmington transfer. He was Kevin Keats' best player at UNCW.
Right.
And then they got him, obviously him and Devin Daniels from Utah, who practiced with the team last year. Right. And anyone who covered the team or spent any time with the team last year swore up and down that Daniels was the best player on their team in practice last year. He's been a little slow to translate in games this year, though he did have the good game there last time out. He's a good guard, athletic guard. Neither is a great three-point shooting threat. They both kind of have very similar games, mid-range games. They know how to score, but, you know, it's a little bit different trying to score in the ACC and against Power 5 teams than at UNCW.
All right, let's get to some of the keys that's made them good so far. What's made NC State good so far? Then we'll flip the script and say what has NC State struggled with so far?
I think they're a better defensive team this year. They're deeper this year, so they're exerting more effort, I believe, on the defensive end. They're trying. You can see the maximum effort there, particularly that Vanderbilt game. I thought they were, that was their strength, was on the defensive side. Just kind of, they press more this year because they have more bodies. You know, he's really down to about 7 or 8 guys last year. He's playing 10 guys this year. And Markel Johnson, you know, he led the ACC in assists last year. He's the best athlete on the team. He's their most dynamic player. When he asserts himself on the offensive end as a scorer, and that's when NC State is at their best. And he's been trying to find that balance of, you know, hey, do I lead the ACC in assists or do I try to hit a little bit more of my own offense this year because they don't have as many gifted outside scorers as they did last year?
Obviously, basketball is a little bit different than most sports. You have a lot of transfers, grad transfers anyway. And you want to, and obviously Kevin wants to be good now. And I think at Raleigh they expect him to be good now. That's just the expectation at North Carolina State. Is there a concern, though, that there's not enough recruiting of quote, his own talent and too much emphasis on the transfers?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely a fair point to make about Kevin Keats in his second year. I think last year he tried to make do with what he had, and mm-hmm. that was good enough to win 11 games and go to the NCAA tournament. I think more people this year would have liked to have seen, you know, they've already lost one transfer to St. John's going out. And then, as you mentioned, they lost year 7 to Georgetown. So they have a kid named Jericho Helms this year who's a freshman who looks really good, looks like a kid who could be a 4-year player for them. But yeah, I think you're right. I think this is also a style that Kevin Keats was used to at Hargrave Military School. You know, you kind of turn the roster over every year. You know, you try to get 8 to 9, 10 guys, and you play them all. So it'll be interesting to see if he has the ability to find some players and develop them and keep them You know, that was one of the problems under Mark Gottfried was, and you're seeing that now, Cody and Caleb Martin are having Nevada in the top 10 of the country. And they started their careers at NC State. So, yes, they've done well to get transfers in and use those players to help them. But I think you're absolutely right. At some point, you have to be able to find and develop your own talent.
This is an interesting one that comes up, this quadruple header in Atlantic City. There are certainly several Philly-based schools that will be there. How did you feel about this when you saw it on the schedule, and how do you feel about how college basketball puts days like this together?
Yeah, you know, NC State just had a trip to Miami, and there wasn't a lot of people there when they played Vanderbilt, and there wasn't a lot of people when Miami played Yale in the same building. College basketball is kind of searching for an identity or their own spot on the calendar right now. And as long as ESPN or some of these groups that put together these games are willing to do it, I think colleges are going to do it. It's funny because NC State just played their most interesting game of the non-conference season. That was at their old building,
right?
Their on-campus building, which only holds 5,000 people now, but it was a great atmosphere. The place was full, and there's not going to be many people in Atlantic City, I can't imagine. And then there won't be that many, you think?
With the Philly schools there, you'll get some crowd.
Not huge,
but you'll get some crowd because of a couple of the Philly-based schools being there.
Yeah, as long as the building's not empty, you know, Miami was like friends and family.
Oh, so. No. Believe me, I just did two games in Cancun. I mean, they brought elementary schools over. It was great.
Yeah. So to me, it's kind of a larger question for college basketball. Where do you fit in the calendar? How do you get yourself in a situation where you have people more engaged? Obviously, across the board in sports, attendance is down. People are just more interested in staying home. You know, not everyone's got the money to travel to all these places and see these games. So you can't necessarily blame people, but. I'm not necessarily offended by these neutral site games, but to me, you know, college basketball on Saturday here in the Triangle, Gonzaga is at North Carolina.
Yes.
You tell me it gets better than that.
No.
And I'll find a way. But, you know, to me, and then Carolina's going to go to Gonzaga next year. So to me, I'm more interested in stuff like that than, I don't mind the holiday tournaments, you know, Thanksgiving week tournaments.
Sure.
Some of these are, you know, they get a little excessive, but. It's good for these teams to get out and play somewhere else and be in a different environment. I can see that.
Back in the 90s, I actually did a game in Reynolds. So I know what the old Reynolds, I guess it's now Jim Valvano Court now at
That's
Reynolds
right.
College.
Arena.
Arena.
Arena. KL Court. It's got many names now.
Yeah.
Many names.
But I actually did a game in there, so I know what it was like. It was really, really special. Any quick thoughts? I mean, you probably haven't wrapped yourself around too much around Penn State, but you know, how much do you really know about them, Joe?
I remember Coach Chambers from, you mentioned Cancun. Penn State was down in Puerto Rico in 2012, I believe it was.
Yeah.
The 2012-13 season, and I was really impressed with what he had as a coach. You know, I kind of put him in that class with Steve Donahue, the crew's now really excelling at Penn, where he's a really good coach. The question is always going to be, can you find and develop talent? And I think, you know, they have a pretty good team, obviously, this year with the win over Virginia Tech. I thought that the Paul loss was a little disconcerting.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's a tough league, obviously. And Penn State's not traditionally been a great basketball school for the same reasons North Carolina's not a great football school. So it's a challenge, but I do think he is a very good coach, and I think he's very well respected by his peers.
Now, one final question, I'll let you go. The Big Ten has gone to 20 games in its conference schedule. The ACC is scheduled to do that next year, going to 20 games. Do you have any initial thought on that and what the fans might think about an additional home game, an additional road game in the conference?
You know, I think the ACC had a round robin, and the Big Ten, I believe, used to have a round robin as well before all this expansion. Conference games meant something because you knew you were going to see a team a second time. Now these conferences are so big, and literally nobody cares that NC State's playing Pitt, right? Not to pick on Pitt in your market,
no.
But they don't.
That's
care.
Okay. Like, everybody in this market picks on Pitt anyway, so don't worry about it. You're essentially just joining the crowd. Go ahead.
There you go. Okay. So nobody cares that NC State is playing Pitt. Literally, NC State has not played Duke in football. They will play Duke, who's 20 minutes down the road, once in football every 8 years. People would rather see NC State play Duke twice in basketball, Duke in football, Virginia in football, on and on and on. This is a long way of me saying to you, I believe conferences as we know them are dead. It's just a collection of people who schedule each other. When you don't have the round robin, when you don't have the return game, it's just kind of like, okay, we're playing another good team tonight, but you know, nobody's juiced to see Louisville on a Wednesday night, you know, over at the arena here in Raleigh. They'd much rather see the teams that NC State traditionally played.
Yeah, the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to go from being a conference to being a league. And there is a distinction between the two. So
yeah, it's just kind of a loose confederation at this point. And I think you could probably say the same for the Big Ten.
Joe, thanks so much. Look forward. I assume you're making the trip, so I look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
Joe Giulio joining us from the Raleigh News and Observer. Penn State basketball tomorrow with NC State at 2 o'clock in Atlantic City. Game 2 of what will be a quadruple header in Boardwalk Hall coming up tomorrow. All right, coming up on Monday's show, Nicole Auerbach will join us from The Athletic. She's the one that wrote the article about expansion of the college football playoff with several intriguing and interesting interviews and sound bites that she put into her article. So we're looking forward to talking with her about the article, the impressions she received on it about expanding the college football playoff from 4 to 8. She will join us on the show on Monday. Our thanks today to Jerry Dulac, Emily Kaplan, Andrew Callahan, and Joe Giulio for being on the show today. Today's show presented by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports domestic microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, and the pickle bar is indeed, led by the barrels and the dills, second to none. And don't forget about Brewers Outlet gift cards. Stock up for the weekend now. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummelsburg. For my good friend Sean Carey, I'm Steve Jones. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you Monday here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.